This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Sarah Dandashi. Before we get to Sarah, here's a few announcements. My website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there and you'll find stories that some of the guests have written, stories that I've written, some photos of the guests, some links to their social media. You'll find links to our social media. And that is, of course, Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. That's where we want to see you. Let's get those numbers up. We have a Facebook page as well. Follow us there. And if you listen to us on the streaming services, please give us a good rating. That helps more people find the show by boosting our presence. That's a cool thing for you to do, and I would appreciate it. If you think you'd be right for the show, or maybe you know somebody who'd be right for the show, or maybe you just want to write me and ask me some travel questions or tell me I'm great, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Sarah Dandashi is somebody that makes me feel I don't do enough with my day. I first met her 10 years ago when she appeared on the show. She was a concierge at one of the hip Hollywood hotels, West Hollywood to be exact. And in her spare time, she was building her website and her brand, askaconcierge.tv. She dealt mostly in hospitality with a little bit of travel thrown in, but she was always working. When she wasn't behind the desk at the hotel, she was building her brand. And now, 10 years later, that side hustle has become her full-time gig. She's a content creator, an influencer. She works with hotels. She works with tourism boards. She works with cruise lines. She shoots video content for all these things. She appears on network television, talking about travel and hospitality. She wrote a book. She's got a lot going on. So I would see her off and on at various events over the years, but it was great to finally sit down and catch up with her. Because as you can imagine, she's busy, so I'm glad we got to sneak it in. Here's my chat with Sarah Dandashi. Are you a morning person?
I am a forced morning person.
Okay.
As in, I make myself wake up early and then at night I do get tired. But here's the thing. It's like a struggle. If I don't go to sleep like at 10, like if I don't go to sleep at that right. time, which is like hard for me, and I get a second wind and then I'm up until 1. And then I'm like, cool, let's have that alarm go off at 5:30. And so it's like this struggle all the time. So,
Absolutely. Oh, sure. Oh, so I had to look this up. March of 2016 is when you were on last. So we're coming up on 10 years. So let's not do this every 10 years, shall we?
Let's not. No. Oh my gosh.
10 years from now. Can you imagine? You told us like, you know, we'd still be, you know, talking about this in 10 years. I would have been like, 10 years? I'm still doing this?
You can't even imagine that,
oh,
right?
Oh my God, Mike, you failure. That's what I would have said to myself, my future self.
No. Because like looking forward, it seems like, oh my gosh, I can't even fathom it. And then like looking back, you're like, that just seemed like yesterday.
I know. Well, let's rewind it. At the time, you were still working at the hotel.
Yeah.
I think. And you had Ask Concierge.
Yeah.
And you were just starting to, I guess, blog and do all these things. And you had, you were doing a video thing, I think, even at that time, weren't you?
I was doing video. I was doing video. I started video in 2012.
Yeah.
I mean, like, look, when you have a background in film and TV, I'm like, it's fine. And you learn how to do video content fairly inexpensively. So, yeah, I was definitely doing video. Gosh, so much has happened in those 10 years. but I know that in 2016, I had kind of like recommitted and I'd started doing, oh gosh, I had like two video like tips that were coming out a week. And so I really kind of was starting to play into the whole like batching content, world. And yeah, things were taking off. I was getting kind of like bigger partnerships here and there, but yes, I was still working at a hotel, and Ask a Concierge, which I had started in 2012, was kind of like going to another level. But I think anytime that, you know, kind of we create something, You know, we have these moments where it's like you're going along and then, oh, you step to another level. And then you go along and then you step to another level. So we've had a series of other levels that have happened since then.
What year did you leave the hotel for good?
Oh, so I left in 2020. So truthfully, I could have left before that. But, you know, it's
good timing,
though. Yeah.
When the world shuts down, you know.
it was actually great timing because I should have and could have left prior to that. But then, you know, kind of going into this, because I think in 2019, I did like 50 trips on top of working full time. And keep in mind, like working full time is not working at home. It's, I have to clock in and stand within like a 3 foot square.
How many days a week were you required to be there? How could you travel so much while you still had the job?
Because I would either work like 10 days in a row and then have 10 days off, or, you know, so I would play with that. Some weeks I might work only 4 days because I would give somebody else like an extra shift. But I was very strategic. It was very, I would come off of a plane, drop my bags, put on my uniform, go straight to the airport. I go straight to the hotel. And yeah, I mean, I did what nobody else would do, which is that's how you create things in life. You do things that other people wouldn't do. So, but going into 2020, I was like, okay, like you can work on your own by now. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, maybe like I'll leave in maybe like April. So was still at the hotel. The pandemic happens. And why it was a blessing in the sense is that I was on unemployment because I was still fully employed. So I was on unemployment. Everybody was at home. And then it allowed me to be like, okay, well, at least like the basics are covered when nobody's getting wealthy off of this, but at least the basics are covered. But what do I know how to do? It's create a lot of content for cheap. And at that time I saw everybody was like, oh, I can't wait to travel again. And I'm like, I don't know how long this is going to last, but I can't just sit here and be like whining about when we can travel again. Like that's not productive. So I kind of looked at the landscape. I'm like, nobody's talking about like what's going on. So that's when I started doing like a 2-minute travel update. Like, this is what's going on in the world. Should you feel comfortable to travel? This is what you can do. This is what's open. This is what's not. It's like, oh, whatever, because every day, week was changing, you know? And then the bigger brands were watching and they were like, this is actually great. Do you want to do TV segments from home? I was like, yeah. And so then that led to a whole other aspect of the career where I really started doing a lot of TV, be it like spokesperson work, SMTs, you know, being a guest talking about like the state of travel. So that opened up the brand to not just being like travel influencer, you know, but now like travel, like expert that's being invited on shows to talk about things. And then because I wasn't traveling, I could actually work on my first book. So my first book came out from the pandemic, which is Hospitality from Within, a hospitality book that kind of ties in all of these lessons that you've learned, that I learned from all these years of working in hospitality, but then also sharing other great stories from colleagues of mine from around the world. So the real takeaway, you know, aside from these lessons, is also that reminder that hospitality is universal. And so that has been great. And I've been trying to work on book number two, but my travel schedule's been so crazy. I'm like, oh man, I need to like purposely ground myself to get that out because that's hard to do. But yeah.
Wow. How far into the pandemic did you take your first trip? When did and where was it? Was it like a little mini staycation somewhere or was it a big one?
Yeah, so it was... Yeah, so what, if the pandemic started in the beginning of March, it was the middle of July. I waited, because like also there was a lot going on in LA too, you know, so that was to keep us busy.
Oh, yeah.
Glued to our TV screens, like, and then looking out the window and being like, that's happening on Sunset Boulevard. Oh, I hear the helicopters. It was very crazy.
Yeah.
But it was the middle of July. And I did a road trip to Sedona with my former HR director who had hired me. We had never been friends or hung out before. And, she was like, oh, we should whatever. So instead of like getting together for coffee, we got together to do a road trip to Sedona and we've been best friends ever since.
Oh,
but, yeah, which is great. So, and then right after that, probably 2 weeks after that, I went to Mexico and then September, I ended up going to Pennsylvania, where my mom was living at the time, my grandparents were, and I spent like a solid month there. And that was great because that was, maybe it was the year after that. Yeah, it was the year after that that my grandfather ended up passing away. So he was like 95 at the time. So I had solid time with him. And I just remember sitting outside, like in the yard, like with my grandfather. So I was able to have some like cool key moment. Like it ended up being great in a lot of ways, you know,
looking back in that time, it was, you know, going through it at the time, we were all, you know, confused and scared didn't know what was happening. But when you're looking back now, I mean, I know a lot of tourism boards and things have said, you know, giving, you know, taking a break, certainly for the environmental reasons. I know, sure. Like some reefs needed time to recover. Some places that have gotten over tourism.
Totally.
It showed them what it was like. Oh,
yeah.
What is this place like when it's not thousands of tourists here every day? And, you know, and it wasn't a bad thing, you know, for us to for a little bit.
It was hard to go through it, but I think, you know, with the right outlook and mindset, you know, I think it was not easy, but I think it inspired a lot of people to really focus on what matters and what changes they needed to make, be it work changes, be it relationship changes, be it health changes, whatever it was. So for that, you know, I think the growing pains were probably worth it.
So now that you're not a concierge or you're an ex-concierge, are you still using Ask a Concierge? That's your brand, or have you shifted into...
Yeah.
Something else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, Ask a Concierge is very much, I mean, every day, all day, every day. But yeah, I kind of have a couple aspects to my business now. Obviously, there's the social media side of things and very obviously active on Instagram as well as LinkedIn, which has been great. And I host two shows now. So I host Good Morning Hospitality, which is a hospitality podcast that we do live every Wednesday morning. 7 a.m. Pacific. So the joke's on me. Yeah,
here I am complaining about 9 a.m. Yeah, and you're up there, you know, camera ready at 7 a.m.
Yeah, hair and makeup ready. I will say, the guys that I work with never give me a hard time if I'm like a few minutes late coming on. I'm like, good. You should.
Yeah.
And then I also do the daily Skift daily briefing, which is the 3-minute updates, what's happening in travel and hospitality. So that's been great. And then I do a lot of speaking engagements and consulting for different hospitality brands, but I do have my own private concierge business. So that's what happens offline. So a lot of people just see sort of the front facing social media, which is fine. But obviously with the type of clients I have and what we do and just client confidentiality, I don't share a lot about what's going on with that, but they do a lot of fun things and it's great to work on behind the scenes.
So is a concierge business, how is this different from say a travel agent or something like that?
Because I don't necessarily just do travel. Like I do.
You book activities everything. And events and things like that?
Activities, events. It's also lifestyle. Like I help them with restaurant reservations at home. Sometimes they're like, hey, we need a tutor for one of my children. Can you give me like the top 3 tutors that are in this area? It's everything. Oh, we want to send gifts. I send, you know, to so-and-so because it's their birthday, whatever it is. So it's very much, it's all lifestyle assistance and obviously travel is part of it. But yeah, so.
But the word concierge always conjures up some kind of like fancy schmancy hotel. Yeah. And there's always somebody working there. How has the concierge community seen you and like how it's changed in the world? Do they think you're like, you know, cheapening their brand or like modernizing their brand or
I hope they don't know.
Not cheapening, you know what I mean? It's just like, we're proper concierges. We work, you know, we're
funny
private.
You get it. Cause there's definitely that sort of feel and understanding.
There's always pushback somewhere, or a lot of it's jealousy too.
Well, but I wouldn't necessarily say that. I mean, I think like the concierge profession, just like as a whole, there's been a challenge there, right? You know, because there's been a challenge in employment and, you know, traveler levels just haven't been what they were. They've been inconsistent. So sometimes, and it depends on the property, but some properties were like, okay, well, do we really need a concierge or do we just have a front desk agent that does concierge stuff? So I know that they've really... it's been a challenge for them to be like, hey, no, no, we are very much relevant. We very much need to be here. And so the 5-star properties definitely get it. Some 4-star properties may or may not, depending on who's in charge, what makes sense, what their bottom line is, what market they're in. But there's been a big sort of focus on that, especially with more AI, more technology. I mean, I think that's the age old challenge that hospitality has always had. Oh, incorporating more technology without losing right. the human touch. So that's been, I think, like a big focus. But I do see that a lot of former hotel concierge have gone off to create their own travel businesses, very similar to mine. So it's, I don't think it's anything that anybody looks down on or poo-poos per se, because it has its own set of challenges. Everybody knows having a job is very different than being an entrepreneur. And sometimes being an entrepreneur looks awesome, but
it's a lot of work.
You work every day, every night, weekends, all different. Like you are the industry or the job. So you're the business. So it's, I think it's very much like understanding and respecting that. And then whenever I engage with somebody at a property and it's like, hey, it's me again. So there's nothing but, you know, warm feelings, certainly from my side, at least.
Did you have a travel show that I remember? I don't know if it's still the same one that you do live. Is this there was one that was very West Hollywood focused?
Oh. Yeah, so I was. I've been busy.
why I can't keep it straight.
Yeah, I know. I was the host of West Hollywood's The Creators Podcast, so that was great. We did that for just about 2 years, and that was so awesome because it was really bringing to life these stories of. I mean, for anybody that knows West Hollywood, I mean, it really is. This little city, this enclave in the bigger Los Angeles of these creatives, whether it's photographers, whether it's chefs, whether it's, you know, all these different people that have either from there or they've come there from other places and they've built these awesome businesses that we know. So that was such a cool thing to be a part of because, again, to have those conversations, see how these people were able to create these incredible brands that very much started in West Hollywood but really become global. Like everybody knows, that's kind of like the heartbeat of the city. So that was great to be a part of. And you know, will always be near and dear to my heart because that was a fun project.
Oh, I know. I'm so bummed this summer because you were on board the Cunard Queen Elizabeth shooting. Yeah. You were on for like the whole 10 days or something, or 11 day cruise. Yeah. And I joined immediately as you got off.
Right. I know.
We just missed each other.
It's such a shame. Exactly. So I worked with Cunard and I ended up doing 3 cruises with them this last year. So I did a cruise through Norway on Queen Anne, their newer ship. Then I did Queen Elizabeth in Alaska. And then she just started her maiden Caribbean season.
Which I'm joining this week.
Yeah. Fantastic. So,
yeah.
So that was great. I know. I was so bummed that we missed
each other. We could have shot so much fun stuff.
I know.
That would have been great.
Another
that would have been
time.
Great. But what a cool ship, right? I always, people try to like describe Cunard, you know, ask me to describe it compared to most ships. And it's hard to describe other than the fact that it's more old school and kind of classy, I thought. You know, it's just like, it's not, it's like that old wood, you know, and just kind of quiet and, I don't know. It's like people giving dance lessons and stuff. It's very old and English and just kind
it
of.
It is.
I mean, I like it. You know, they're not just in your face trying to sell you like drink packages and totally. Bingo and that kind of stuff.
Totally. You know? It's a really cool brand because of the history behind it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've been around for quite some time. It's fascinating what they've been able to build it. I mean, they've been around since the early 1800s.
Yeah.
And to have that sort of like sense of tradition, it feels, it's just got like a great classic vibe to it that I love how you mentioned it's like no pressure to like oversell on packages or this or two. It just is awesome. They do a fantastic job.
Did they seek you out or did you seek them out?
They sought me out. Well, one of the new CMO of North America, I've worked with her, on other, like when she worked at other companies. And so like we were familiar, she was familiar with my work and this, and she's like, oh, this kind of makes sense. Like this is your style is very on brand with them. So yeah, kind of happened organically.
Had you done an Alaska cruise before?
Yeah, I had.
Okay. You had.
I had, very differently though. So I'd done Uncruise, which was okay. So cool.
Because I did them in Steve Cortez down in La Paz.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
They're great. I wanted to go on that so badly. They're great. I mean, look, you can't even compare because what it was like, I don't know, was it 50 passengers?
Yeah, I know. That's really small.
And you know, but still very cool as far as like what they do.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a nice way to have a different experience of Alaska that it was great. I think it was like more complimentary.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So I've done a million Alaska cruises, but I haven't done Norwegian fjords. How does it, I imagine that the scenery is kind of similar. How was the cruise experience in the fjords?
Oh, well, awesome. Well, first of all, I'm a big fan of that ship. So it's like the newest one of the fleet. It's probably
the Queen Anne.
It's the Queen Anne, maybe a year and a half old.
Yeah.
You know, so anytime you're on a brand new ship, that's awesome. It's interesting because you do have some of the Cunarders that have been around for a while. They still prefer the older ships, but I really loved this ship. It was fantastic and an amazing spa. It is different though, because you would think it would be similar to Alaska, but it's different just because of the experiences that you're doing in Norway, you know? So, cause you do have a very, obviously culturally, that's going to be completely different. I think it's something that if somebody's done Alaska, you should totally do Norway. Cause again, okay. Yeah. It's fjords, but it's still a different landscape.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
And fewer bears, from what I heard.
that too. But it's kind of a cool way because you're getting a different taste of Europe than like maybe like the traditional parts of Europe that are part of the.
Well, I've done an Iceland one, and I did Ireland and the UK, but I still haven't done. But this summer I'm doing a month, all of August in Europe, so I'm going to be bouncing around all over. But Norway. I still haven't done a Norwegian or a Baltic. But yeah. I will be in the Mediterranean this summer. So, I'm doing. Speaking of Cunard, I'm taking the Queen Mary from New York to Southampton.
Oh, so
I'm
doing the crossing. Transatlantic.
Yeah, and the That'll Queen Mary cool. too. Yeah, it's. I don't like 7 days at sea, but I'm doing it for the experience.
Yeah. Just, oh yeah. For
and
sure.
the money, but I'm doing it. You know. Yeah. For the experience.
I know that's definitely. Yeah, that's definitely going to be interesting to see. Yeah.
What 7 days at sea.
That. So, yeah, that's a lot of days to see, for sure.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's a lot Antarctica. Of looking at water.
Well, yeah. And so I did Antarctica on Atlas Ocean Voyages and the 2 days that it takes to cross the Drake Passage.
Ooh, yeah. Like, I did that.
Yeah. That's a whole.
How did you get the lake or the shake? I got the lake going down and the shake coming
same,
back.
Same.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too bad of a shake, but it was definitely like I was watching out the window like, what?
Oh, man. We had waves. I was on Seabourn on that one. And it was like waves crashing over the window. And crazy. Yeah, it was rough. Yeah.
Right?
And I had to do a show while the boat was.
You're like, hey.
I had to sit down for half of it. It was really. I'm sure. It was, oh, my God. It was terrible. Okay. So are you still doing any other cruise projects or you got any in the pipeline coming up?
We'll see. I mean, I think right now it's still kind of like in the process of like putting together what the year ends up looking like, which is cool, which is great. And so I'm sure, I mean, I will be at Sea Trade this year. So that's the big cruise conference that happens in Miami. So yeah, we'll see. I'm sure like some great stuff will end up like popping up that kind of makes sense. So, but I also like, I have enough that like I'm filming literally every day. So, there's plenty to keep me busy at home, plenty of work to keep me, you know, that. And I still got to write the second book because then I got to do my second TED Talk. So I got a lot of things in the
works. Okay, so what was the, if there was a theme? I know it's like, wasn't the first one was more about tips, right? Like travel kind of tips and things for people to know.
Oh, what? You mean the book?
The book, yeah.
Not travel trips. It was tips. It was like, it's like an educational hospitality book. It's like hospitality 101. So it's okay. And it's like lessons that you can kind of like learn from that, that ultimately business lessons.
So your next one, what would be the theme of that one? If you don't want to give too much away, I mean, you're sketching it out.
It's taking some of those fundamentals, but building it out just a little bit more and applying it to a broader basis. Where I think this first book felt very much like hoteliers really resonated with it, even though I honestly think anybody that owns any business would resonate with it. Whereas this one will be more clearly. Yeah, it'll have like a wider audience. So we'll see.
10 years and you've taken a million trips since then, since we last covered all this.
Goodness.
But I mean, I'm not going to ask you to recount all these things. But if you had to look back, what are some of your favorites?
Standouts?
Some of your real like, holy crap, that was amazing.
You know, Antarctica was awesome. And I got to take my mom on it, which was really
that's great.
Cool. Like, and it was extra special about that. It was a month after my grandfather passed away, and my grandfather, he was a nuclear scientist and an electrical engineer. And he like built out basically like the whole power grid of Pennsylvania and like part of the Northeast. Crazy. So
he's like king of the nerds out there.
Yeah. King of the nerds. But he was an avid photographer and videographer.
Oh, wow.
So I always say that he's the one who kind of got me into this because he always had like video cameras. And at 7 years old, he would be basically like, yeah, go play with my video camera. So I would go around and like interview rocks in the backyard and do like.
He had one of those early like 80s VHS cameras. Yeah. Like you had to carry it over your shoulder. No, like huge.
Not quite that bad, but like a little bit. But yeah.
It had its own briefcase that you had to get. Yeah,
so
I remember those.
So we play with that at a young age, and I would basically like edit clips because like you weren't really editing. You would just like film, stop. Pick up and then film stop and then you would watch it back and you would basically have created your own video, just filming clip by clip by clip. So I was doing that at like 7 years old. But I say that because he and my grandmother would always go on these amazing cruises, and I'll never forget they had gone to Antarctica. And they went to Antarctica. I need to find out what they went on now. But he came back and had 90 hours of footage of penguins. And I remember sitting in the basement with everybody and it's like, we're going to watch all the penguin footage.
Oh,
and
my God.
You know, I was like 9 being like, oh, I'm over it. I'm so over the penguin.
I want to watch cartoons.
Yeah. Anything else. But it was so great. But I just know like how enamored he was with it and how much they talked about it. And we all felt like we were kind of part of it. So then it was just like the way that things ended up working out. He happened to pass away then a month later, and then I got to bring my mom. And so it was our first time for us. And so to have that moment of like, because we had that special tie, we knew how special it was for him, then we got to experience it. So that's why that was like extra. It wasn't just Antarctica, but it was like the whole family tie to it as well that just really took it to the next level. But some others, my gosh. What are some others that I went to Nicaragua, which was super special. Costa Rica, also great. I was in love with Malta. Malta's just like such a cool place.
I still haven't been because it's a big cruise stop, I know.
It is a big cruise stop.
I'm apparently going to be avoiding it all. I'm going to be all around it.
Yeah,
I'm
going, you're not going.
But I'm going to miss it this summer. But what about it did you like? My mom, who took a cruise,
yeah,
that was her favorite stop over there.
What was it
about it?
I feel like it's this, first of all, like the history of it. And it's been over the centuries, the cultural influences. Because like for one century, you know.
Somebody took it over and then it was conquered by these people.
Exactly.
Then it was conquered by the Africans. Then it was conquered by the Romans.
Totally. So then like the Maltese language is like this random like combination of like Italian, Spanish, Arabic, like a forest. It's just, it's fascinating and it's beautiful. And then they're beautiful. And I don't know that it's sandstone particularly, but like their walkways that they have. I mean, there's just, to me, it's kind of like one of those underrated gems in Europe. And so, and I think visiting it via cruise ship doesn't totally do it justice. You should be there.
Visiting for like, anything via cruise ship doesn't do places justice.
This is true. This is true. But but yeah, I don't know. It was just, I think the history of it was what was so cool. And it's just so pretty.
Yeah, it looks really cool. The only thing I've heard about it, though, recently, just because it is getting more popular, and is the water situation. They don't have like water, like fresh water there is a problem. Oh.
Okay.
So they're working on that in their growth of like, we got to, well, you know, it's a pretty dry, arid island, you know, so yeah. Getting water is like a big deal there. So hopefully I'll get to see it before
Totally.
It goes bone dry.
Totally. But,
how did the TED Talk happen and where did you do it and what year was that?
Yeah. So I just did that. Well, it just came out last year, so 2025, but I did it in October of 2024. I knew I wanted to do a TED Talk, and I actually had – it was so crazy. It was one of those things, like it was happening whether I was showing up or not. But I ended up – I was like, okay, well, let me work with a coach because there's a formula to it. So, like, let me work with somebody that kind of, like, understands it. And we had kind of brainstormed some different ideas, and, that you know, it was like, we think this will be best. And I remember being like – and so I ended up doing the secret to making someone feel special. And I remember thinking, oh, that's so simple. Like, something more like academic or, you know, cerebral. And they're like, no, trust us. Simple is the way to go. And ended up doing it. It was crazy because I got booked 5 weeks out. And so for anybody that knows anything about TED Talks, you don't normally get booked that short of notice. Normally you're booked like 3-4 weeks out – or sorry, months out. And I was booked 5 weeks out. And I had like a 3-week trip to Southeast Asia, and you have to be completely memorized. There's no like teleprompter situation, none of that. And so I came back and I had exactly 7 days to memorize my entire script, a pre-approved script, and then do it. And, I mean, it was crazy. It got chosen as an editor's pick. It's done. It's performed very well online. It's so cool. So it was, and I think you'll appreciate this because, like, you know, we've done a lot as far as, you know, entertainment, performing, all of that. This was next level. I mean, it's
yeah. Well, I think about it as a stand-up because I do this every, you know, I do for like 45 minutes on, you know, I'll be doing it this week on Kunar.
Sure.
And trying to make old Brits laugh on Kunar for 45 minutes. So yeah, after that, 20 minutes seems, it is 20 minutes, right?
The big TED Talks are 20 minutes, but the TEDx's, they like them to be between about 10 to 12 minutes.
Okay. So your theme wasn't, it was travel related? It was about making.
Yeah. Well, it's hospitality. It's the secret of making somebody feel special, you know? All so right. It's like that's what the crux
hospitality.
Of
okay. That makes
hospitality
sense.
Hospitality okay. is. So, and I mean, obviously that ties into to travel, but yeah, it was just it's interesting because I mean I do keynotes, I speak, I can easily speak for 45 minutes, no problem. But half the time I'm like, I have an outline and I'm winging it.
Yeah.
But then if you do stand up, you also have like you've got your jokes.
I have a set list, you know, that yeah. I use. You know, it's in my head, but I mean it's you have bullet points and things like that, and you know. But you didn't have any of that. You're like, you're out there in the round.
It's like a 10-minute monologue. It's the best way to describe it. It really, it's like, except it wasn't Shakespeare. I was definitely thinking, I was like, oh man, thank goodness all those years I did Shakespeare really came to play here. But, and it's interesting because it's a different pacing. And that was what's so fascinating. And I know that you get that doing stand-up. There's so much that can be... People, I think, underestimate the value of a pause or a silence.
Yeah.
In delivering.
Well, they get nervous. You see it in young stand-ups, so people starting out.
Talk
you know,
right away all the time, quickly.
They're afraid of a take a Yeah, well, they're afraid of the silence, so they fill it with, you know, and if it's going bad, they talk faster.
Yeah. Oh,
to,
sure.
You know, to cover it up.
And
so
you
end up like, and it's going worse because you're just blasting through your stuff.
Out of, you're set.
And as you get nervous, you just, out of nerves, you know, it's natural to just kind of talk fast and just, you know, try to fill in the blanks. And did you like, did it come off as well as you wanted?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there were probably like two parts that I kind of like stumbled on things that I noticed probably more than other people notice. I don't know if you know, I dabbled in stand up. I don't know if you know this.
No, we're going to get to your showbiz life in
dabbled.
A minute.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get there.
There's a reason why. Oh my God. this girl. But I will say this, the lessons from that have been so monumental for my public speaking, because it's, you know, half the time it's just, it's like winging it or playing, or it's like you say it and you like let it land. You know, there's different things that just,
well,
even,
who was the crowd?
For what? For the
when you did it, who was sitting out there when you're talking?
Gosh, and that was so crazy too, because it's like you couldn't see the crowd, but there were probably about 200 people in the audience. So it's people that paid to come to see the TED Talk. So, and the theme in general, gosh, what was the theme? The theme was like all about goodness. Because they end up doing, they all end up being themed, you know, because these are independently put on. But kind of like the, like human nature and like human essence and caring and thoughtfulness. And like, so there were so many different.
How many other people were on the bill?
There were a total of eight of us. And I was the last one.
Oh, you had to close it.
I had to close it.
Oh,
man.
So they had to, see, that's hard because, you know, they've seen a lot by the time you get up there.
No.
And yeah.
I was ready. I was like, we got it. So yeah. But it was like fascinating to do because you, again, like for me, I was like bringing in, it's like, okay, I remember doing like Shakespeare monologues. I remember doing stand up, like all of these different tools I've learned along the way, but then I'm delivering a message that's completely unrelated to that. It's, you know, it's hospitality. Yeah. It's talking about caring and delivering that message, but it was cool.
We all have stuff in our arsenal that you never think you'll need. And
it's
like,
toolbox.
You know, college, you know, it's like you go to college and people are like, why do I need to know this? Why do we need to know what a cumulus cloud is? And it's, you know, because you're an educated person and you should probably know how the atmosphere works. And then all of a sudden it'll come up and like, oh, right. What do I need to know Spanish? That's like kids in junior high. It's like,
totally. Well,
it turns out it's pretty damn useful to know it. About your showbiz past, that, you know, I've known you for all these years and I had no idea, because I have a reel of, you know, acting parts that I've done over the years, and then you posted something. You were in a I can't remember which show you posted. You had a bit
Scandal.
Part of,
did you see that post? That post went so crazy
because me and a lot of people who knew you or thought we knew you didn't know that part of you.
Well,
you never mentioned it the whole, you know,
I mean,
when I've seen you.
2012, like,
still.
Also, I think there's a part of it that people see the hospitality side and they don't realize. And then they're like, oh, she's great at making videos or this or that. And I'm like, well, I had extra practice because I was I have a background in film and TV, you know?
I didn't know, like, even in our last interview, I don't think I knew that about you. They're like, you know, was it showbiz, and that is that what brought you
to Los Angeles?
To LA in the first place?
Yeah.
Like all of us? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And working in hotels was very much the day job.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, I think also, I mean, to be fair, it was also ingrained in me to kind of keep things separate because I was working at such high profile properties and they were pretty much like, we don't want to know. But I would work. I mean, they were like, we just want you to show up and not call out. And I was always very good about that. And if I got auditions, I would just move things around. Or if I was doing a show, because I did sketch comedy for like 3 years. So I was doing like live shows every Friday, Saturday night. And I would work the morning shift, go home, have a moment, regroup, then go to the Black Box Theater, do that. And so
So were you where were you doing sketch? Was it like at the Acme or was it UCB or one of those places?
No, I was, so we were, it was an independent company called the Straight Jacket Society. Okay. It was awesome because in between all of our sketches, we play like crazy music and dance and all that stuff. And for anybody that knows me knows that I like love music and I love dancing. So it ended up being like, it was so great. And like we'd write our own scripts and do that. And it was fun. Like we would have a great show every weekend. And so I did that for like 3 years. So I also know a lot of stand-up comedians because we'd have stand-up comedians that would come and do that for a season and check that out. And then obviously so that was very much part of my world, but that was also like, that was like what I did that wasn't hotel related. And then So when it came time to building Ask a Concierge, and I don't remember if I talked about this the last time, but basically I was doing a writing course. So I was there because I was working on a web series with an actress friend of mine, and we were going to do like Two Blondes, One City. And we were working on the script to it. And in the meantime, he was like, well, cool. Well, as you're preparing to do this web series, everybody has a homework assignment and everybody needs to do a vlog. Think about what you're an expert in. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I like to eat healthy and work out, but like, I'm not that guru. And then it was like, the time was like ticking. And I'm like, man, I need to come up with something quick. I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to talk about what I talk about every day at work. I'll talk about what to eat, see, do in LA. I'll call it Ask a Concierge. Like I literally was like, threw spaghetti at the wall. And those videos, by the way, still exist from 2012 on YouTube. I have a scarf and everything. So I totally look, it's cute. And
were they on Vine? If we're going to go way back?
No, because they were too long for Vine. But they were too long for Vine. But yeah. And so immediately everybody was like, oh, these are great. And I'm like, wait, what? And so that's when I was like, oh, I think we're onto something with this. So yeah, that's kind of how Ask a Concierge came together. And so I did it while I was working at a hotel, and then it just kind of like happened organically. So it was so cool because what was very much, I had two different worlds, my film and TV world, my performing world, and then the hotel world. And then this kind of merged it together when I was like,
perfect.
Yeah.
So you see, I'm peeling back all these Sarah layers.
All these.
I had no idea. No idea it went so deep.
You had no idea I was so funny. Yeah. Get in line.
Where did you do? I'll get off the showbiz after this. But where did you do stand up? Where did you do it?
My first one was at the Improv.
Oh God.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. I know, okay. Right? And then, oh gosh. And then I did it at a bunch of like random
open mics.
Yeah, I did a lot of open mics. I think I did like about 10 shows. And then I was like, this is not my vehicle.
Yeah.
Like, this is not my vehicle. Because it's also tricky. I love stand-up, by the way. And like the art of it. Because also what's part of it is like, it's your physicality and your voice in how, and like your set and the thing and your humor has to like be congruent or make sense for literally how you look. Do you know what I mean? So like, I'll just use this as a random example. Like maybe a not so attractive female complaining about like, or talking about like these steamy dates or something like that. That's right. A funnier thing than like an attractive female being like, oh, dating's hard. You know what I mean?
Now I learned that early on. You have to, you know, I was, you know, when I was just starting out, you know, I was like 22 or something. But, you know, you can say, you know, if you're a young and attractive person, nobody wants to hear you bitch about dating. Now you can, there's ways to turn it. You can turn it on yourself and say, I choose horribly or I'm a mess.
Sure.
And that's relatable, but no one wants to, you know,
hear. So it's
like no one wants to hear the rich person bitch about, you know, their life.
Exactly. And so I think part of it, and I think every great stand-up understand, because what you're doing is like, when you come on stage, if people don't know you, they have an idea of who you are, just based on your look.
Yeah.
So understanding that and like playing to that, whether it's contradictory or into it or whatever, I think is also part of the art of it. But I find that all like super fascinating. But yeah, I was saying like, I don't know. I think I feel I had like some pretty perverted jokes. And people were like, I don't think we want to see her say perverted jokes. So I was like, noted.
They do. Or they really do. A little too much. Okay, now back to travel. How about some lowlights of the of any travel and trips you've taken in the last 10 years? Any illnesses, any injuries, any kind of border crossing, police bribery, anything?
Thank goodness, none of that. But so Istanbul is one of my mother's favorite destinations, and there was a conference that was happening. I was going, and of course she was like, "Can I come with?" And I'm like, "You can't come with me on all my trips." But I knew how special it was for her, so I was like, "Sure, come." And it was so interesting because she loves it. She's been there so many times. So many people love Istanbul, and it fell flat for me. And then on top of that, I got super sick.
So I was
supposed to extend my trip and go on and do all this other stuff. And I was like in bed, sick. And
was it food poisoning or was it something else?
No, I got like some nasty flu.
Okay.
And it wasn't COVID either. It was very interesting. And so, and it's bizarre because I don't, knock on wood, somewhere I have wood. I don't get sick really when I'm traveling. So for that to happen to like knock me out, I think that might've even been a first. I'm pretty lucky when it comes to that.
But at least your mom was there to take care of you.
I know. And she was like in the room with me and she didn't get sick.
Wow.
I don't know how that happened. I also got some gnarly, food poisoning this summer.
Where?
After eating some fish in Croatia.
Oh no.
And I was like, ooh. And it was so crazy because we left the restaurant and we're like in a, you know, bus, like, sitting in the bus, you know, like going back home. And I'm like bouncing around.
Oh no,
like,
the bus.
I was like, my tummy feels a little funny. Is that because I've been looking inside at my phone the whole time? And I'm like, I don't think it is actually. So I just set down my phone, whatever. And like, yeah, that was not a fun night.
Oh no. But, oh God. Were you at one of the islands? Where in Croatia were you?
We were just outside of Dubrovnik.
Oh, okay.
So
now there I will be this summer.
Oh, yeah.
I've been there a number of times.
Do not let this story impact.
No, I've been to Croatia five times. Love it. But I mean, it's like.
That can happen anywhere.
It can't happen everywhere, but I'm surprised it happened there. Yeah, I really am.
I mean, and who knows?
You just never know.
Like, and I mean, I also was vegetarian for the past 15 years. And only in the past year and a half, 2 years, I've become pescatarian.
Okay.
So
your body's adjusting maybe?
I think there's an element of like, because you can pretty safely eat vegetables, stuff everywhere around the world. But you know, I mean, like if it's
I thought
cooked,
that until I got to India and okay, I got sick anyway.
That's different. that you can breathe the air and get sick.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, the whole thing is your body's just not used to certain bacteria is really what it is. And so I think that now it's like, oh, I need to just be really extra careful because not all fish are the same.
What made you go to fit? What made you leave vegetarian altogether? Was it like protein? Did you?
I just been doing more study. I mean, some people know this about me, but I am a fitness fan. I don't want to say free. But you know, I mean, like I'm fairly athletic, and so I'm always working out. And I was kind of getting to the point that I was like, oh, I think I need more protein in my diet to like reach certain like fitness goals. And so I was, and then as I was doing more research, that like just how good protein is for women, and as much as you can get being vegetarian. It's harder to really hit those high goals of like 150 grams of protein a day just being vegetarian because you'd have to have like a lot of extra supplements. So
especially now that you're 29, you know, you have to, you know, it becomes, from what I've read, it's more of a thing.
Now that I'm 29.
As you hit 30.
Totally, right? So I was going to say women of a certain age, but I was like, wow, that would sound really weird, but
believe
whatever.
Me, I'm living with somebody. I hear this all the time about protein.
Yeah.
Protein.
Yeah, it's all about protein. So
okay. But other than that incident, nothing bad.
No, nothing bad. No, I'm good. I haven't like
sushi? Have you embraced it?
Oh. sushi was my gateway.
Yeah, I bet that's probably.
Sushi was my gateway. Like,
I went to Japan with someone who doesn't eat fish. That's a really hard thing to do.
It's so hard. And I've always loved sushi. And that was like, even as a vegetarian, I was like, oh my gosh, I miss going out on sushi dinners. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's the, this year looking ahead?
Yeah.
I'm going to be one of these newscasters who always ask you this question. What are the trends for 2026, Sarah? Tell us what's hot in travel right now.
You want to know about the travel trends. Okay. So we can dive into that.
Other than my passport getting less and less useful as the years go by.
Right? That's a
whole
other thing.
Just hard to see.
It's going to be an interesting year. You know, I think... So I feel like this is like the year of the safari. So if we're talking about big bucket list stuff, which is obviously not something everybody's going to do, but like, I think how the past couple of years, the big bucket list trip that everybody was trying to do was Antarctica. Now I think we're going to be shifting into like, for those that are and can do those bucket list trips, they're really focusing on safaris. I also feel like people are going to be like logging off a whole lot more. People are really craving real connection, you know, with just so much AI and social media and everything in our face. We're really coming to a head as far as like how much online connectedness is too much. And people want to just
You mean like a retreat where people, they take your phones away and like no Wi-Fi.
Take your phones away.
I'm all for that.
Do more like group things where they're just like, they're really just not as much, you know, focused on necessarily documenting it. I feel like it's like people are going to go and like touch grass, you know? I'm seeing some of these things like really be big this year. I think these are good shifts and people also maybe not necessarily wanting to go to just the main highlights. But I will say this, despite all of this economic uncertainty, despite all of this political drama around the world, people are still, they're like, travel matters. I feel like we've seen this great shift of the American dream has shifted. You know, it's not necessarily the white picket fence and all of that, but travel is a big component as far as what Americans are prioritizing.
And living abroad. You know, I'm talking to more and more expats these days, and, you know, it's a dream of mine. I'm still planning on eventually I want to live overseas somewhere.
Yeah.
How about you? Have you thought about it? I mean, you know, it's like as someone as nomadic as yourself, I know you're busy, but you could probably, you know, do your gig from multiple places.
Yes and no, because I get a lot of work in the U.S. that I'm traveling to, so that would become a pain to fly back and forth from somewhere like in the Far East or something. I mean, I'm half Lebanese, and so I lived in Saudi Arabia until I was six. I lived in London as a kid. I spent like many like chunks of time like in Paris as a kid, and then also all my family on that side of my family, they all live in the Middle East and Europe, and so I've already lived abroad.
Right.
It was funny. I was American, but I lived internationally pretty much until I was eight, which was fascinating. It's probably a story for another time. But
and to hear more about that, you go to 2016 March and hear our first episode.
Yeah, right.
Sarah Dandashy. We did talk about that part of your life.
We did. Yeah. And so I think there's not a strategic, there's not a pull for that. I'm not seeking to live abroad just to live abroad. It needs to be strategic and make sense for me work-wise. And right now, work has me bouncing around the U.S. I do plan on going to more conferences and work-related things in the Middle East this year. So I'm curious to see how that opens up different partnerships and trips. And
do you have a second passport?
I don't. I don't.
Could you get one? Could you get like a dual citizenship with your background?
No, because and I asked because I remember. So my dad technically was born in Syria, even though like our family is Lebanese. Wow. And I don't think that
passport won't help you too much.
And I don't know if he ever had a Lebanese passport. Maybe it was only Syrian. I think it was only ever Syrian. But then, I mean, he's had an American passport for decades. Right. So he only has one passport and he would be my gateway to something else. And on my mom's side of the family, it's, you know, it's German, Scandinavian, but like you could trace them back to the Mayflower. So okay.
We could all, you know, that's not going to help either. So, yeah, okay. All right. So
this is where we're at. Yeah.
Where are you headed next? What's your next big one? And is there one this already on the books this year that you're really looking forward to?
So I have a personal trip to Tokyo. So I have not been to Japan yet. So
ever?
No.
Come on.
I mean, like the airport, but that didn't count. I just bought a bunch of Kit Kats and like that. What was that?
We were just there last year, a couple of years ago. Well, 2 years ago now. I've been there a couple of times. You're going to love it. Where are you going to go?
Well, I was supposed to go this next week, but then I got booked for work, and so we've had to move it. I'm actually going to be going with Alice Ford.
Yeah.
So we pushed it back to April. So we'll see. We'll obviously like do Tokyo, but then she's working on a book as well that is about like a bunch of hikes around the world. So we'll probably do a little bit of Tokyo. And then I think there are some hikes not too far away from there that we might go do. So she can kind of get some content with that and I'll join because that's awesome. And yeah. So,
April, are you trying to catch the cherry blossoms? I don't know.
Yeah, that's why we kind of tried to time it around them. We're just hoping.
It's hard to time.
It's hard to time. Also B, the two of us are so busy. Like we'll put something on the books and then it's like, I just booked a gig, can't do it or whatever. So probably, going back to what I did this last summer as far as favorite trips, and hopefully I'll do something similar, we ended up doing two world wonders in one weekend. So we left Los Angeles, flew to Rome on ITA Airways, had a 10-hour layover in Rome. So we dropped our stuff at the airport, went in to the Colosseum, which we've been to before, but like for the point of this, to do two world wonders. 10-hour
layover.
10-hour layover. Went to the Colosseum, got some pizza, got some gelato, back in a taxi cab, back to the airport, flew on to Egypt, went to Cairo, did the pyramids the next day. So we left on a Thursday at 3 p.m. Friday, we saw the Colosseum. Saturday, we saw the pyramids. Sunday, we did some like shopping in like, you know, in
a bazaar. Some of the
markets. And by Monday at 1 p.m., we were back in LA. That was an epic trip. And we planned it like 7 days ahead of time. So
that's insane.
I'm hoping to do something like that again this year because that was epic. I also went to New Zealand for like 3 days too last year.
Okay. So, as amazing as that sounds, that also sounds really exhausting. I mean,
yeah,
do you feel like you cheated? I mean, I still haven't been to Egypt. I mean, that's been on my bucket list high, so, but I mean, I don't want to do it in a day though.
It was a taste. Look, it was one of those things.
It's like, definitely a taste. It was a small taste.
A taste. I mean, it was one of those things like, I think it ends up being fun because you're doing it for the adventure of.
Yeah, you say you did it. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
That second morning, what we didn't factor because like, we basically landed into Egypt at 2 a.m. And I was like, oh, yeah, we'll probably go to the pyramids around 9 a.m., not factoring in like, oh, it's hot. They're going to pick you up at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So by the time we got back to our hotel, it was like 4 in the morning. And they're like, cool, so we'll see you in 2 hours.
2 hours.
And we're like,
huh?
But God. So worth it. Because again, it's like that reminder of like, it wasn't that expensive. We did it for like, it ended up being like $1,200 each. So what? For like the scheme of things.
Okay. All right. What time of year was this?
We did it like on a random weekend in July.
Oh my God. So you went to Egypt in the middle of July?
Yeah.
Oh God. It was great. How hot was that?
Good, but it was also cheap. It was hot, you know.
Yeah,
but
it was off season. Yeah, I guess.
It was off season. So, and it was great. It was, and they were so happy to have us there. And, you know, it's like, and I mean, I also did New Zealand in 3 days.
Oh my
and
God.
That was cool too. I mean, it's part
I'm exhausted
of it,
just hearing this. I'm exhausted.
The adventure of it all. And yeah. I'm like, your girl's also busy. I can't be that in places that long. Like,
I get it.
But putting me on a cruise is very challenging.
That 11 days must have killed you up there with slow Wi-Fi and everything.
It's because like that's, I'm not just, A, I'm not on vacation.
Right.
B, I have daily things that I have to upload and like I'm, yeah. and it's,
cruises
and I
have are to be tough connected. For that.
It's very challenging for that. So for me, those longer trips are very difficult to do. But you kind of make the most of it and, you know, whatever.
For 3 days in New Zealand, was it South Island or where did you go?
Yeah. So we went into Auckland. We spent a day in Auckland because I've got some friends there. We had like the best day. That was just awesome. Then we flew down to Queenstown and then spent 2 days in Queenstown.
There was bungee jumping and doing your crazy. Yeah. Did you whitewater raft and all that?
No, because it was also off season. It was like winter. Okay. So I was, but like, it was fine. But what I would have done, and I had this feeling at first, but I was going with my travel buddy who had been to Queenstown and, when he was younger, and he had all these like fond memories in the summers and whatever. Like we went off season. So if I would do it again, I'd spend way more time in Auckland because I had so much to do there and contacts there and probably would have just done like a quick, like, 24 hours in Queenstown, you know, whatever. But it's fun. Like, it's one of those things that, like, it's a reminder that you can just go do things like that and travel's just like a state of mind. Like, jet lag is all mental.
Well, okay. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. I mean, I'm sure people ask you this on your morning shows. How do you handle the jet lag? What's your secret, Sarah? What is it?
The secret.
Your secret to jet lag?
At the end of the day, it's just like I don't know, you power through. But like for me, it's you have caffeine at the right amount of time, you go active, you be outside when you need to be outside to get actual sunlight. But I'm also the type of person that it's like it's temporary, right? So it's like I can just push through. Are there times that I'm like, yo, I'm tired and I pass out at 5 p.m.? Sure. Yeah, definitely. But I think it's also like you're running on adrenaline because it's exciting.
How about flying? I mean, are you a good plane sleeper? I'm bad at sleeping on a plane.
Oh, dude, I'm out before the plane. Like,
I hate people like
I'm
you.
I'm out.
That helps a lot. If you can get your sleep done on a plane, that's great.
Yeah. No, totally. So
you don't take Ambien or anything like that. You didn't do anything.
I've never taken. No, I don't know. I mean, I think I took melatonin once, and I was like, I don't need this. No, I'm my body's pretty. When it's time to go to bed, I mean, I run myself pretty hard. So like, when it's time to go to bed, my body's
you're
like,
out.
We are out. Yeah, exactly. I always used to joke, like, I could nap anywhere. So in a car, on a bench, in a plane, whatever.
Do you allow yourself? I mean, are you a big points hoarder? I mean, are you going in business or are you queen of the lounge, the VIP lounge or access? What's your preferred method?
I'm definitely a big fan of loyalty. Choose a brand, a company, and stick to it. I'm a big Delta fan. The loyalty helps. Like, I do get upgrades here and there.
They're really devaluing these things now. Yeah, I mean, totally points.
Are. They totally are. For me, and like the lounge, like, so keep in mind, like last year was a slow year for me and I did 80 flights. The year before I did 110 flights. That's a lot of flights. So for me, the lounge is like, it's not a... It's not like a perk. It's like a necessity. It's like I need a place to like grab a quick coffee, have a bite of something healthy, and like keep it moving, you know. So the lounge thing is like kind of like it just kind of makes sense just because of how much I'm traveling. I'm so not one of those people that like, oh, it's got to be first class or business all the time. Like it's to me is it a nice thing? Sure, but. For me, it's all about the destination more than I would much rather spend instead of spending $2,000 extra on a nice seat for 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours.
Yeah, that's not worth it.
I'd rather take that and spend that towards like a cool experience or something in the location.
I'm pretty much convinced everybody up there in business and first class. I mean, most didn't pay for it. You know, they're either like double platinum executive. Yeah. Or their business paid for it. You know what I mean?
It's paid for. Exactly. And so, you know, is it nice at times? Sure. And I will say this, I have definitely, because a lot of the loyalty games are about how much you spend. So there are definitely times that I pay for upgrades Not because I'm bougie and I need an upgrade, but I'm paying for it to specifically make sure I get my dollar spend so I keep my status.
Right. Are you a credit card hoarder? Are you a points gatherer?
I have some, and then I use them, and then I mean, but they never get so crazy.
Right.
You know,
you're not
and
doing
I'm also
the hacking
sitting,
game.
No, I don't have time for that. Like, I mean, there are people that are into it. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, they've made whole careers off of it. I don't know. That's just not my, like, you know. I mean, I like using my points here and there and definitely being strategic and understanding where you might get a better bang for your buck. But
so what's a place that you've gone that you haven't been to yet that you're dying to get to and you're trying to make it work through, business, whatever, I want to shoot there, but it's just not happening. And was there a moment you just going to hell with it? I'm going on my own and because I can't wait any longer.
Well, there are two places that are on my list that haven't happened yet, but so I really want to go to Jordan and I really want to go to Morocco.
Morocco's been on mine for a long time. Yeah,
long time. Like since I was 14.
Wow.
And it just like, and it was crazy because me going to Egypt was finally like, oh, I've now been to all the continents. Which is crazy.
You went to Antarctica first before you got to Africa.
Africa.
That's crazy.
I lived in Saudi Arabia. I lived across the Red Sea.
You could have taken a rowboat.
Like proximity, you know? And I'm like, what? And some might even argue, like, Egypt's not the real Africa. Whatever. It is. It's part of the continent.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's North Africa. I mean, it is.
Yeah, totally. But, like, you know, people are like, real.
Sure.
More Africa than North Africa. But yeah, I mean, those are on my list. So we'll see.
Okay.
But I tend to talk about it. And then next thing you know, I get a random call and I'm like, cool, let's make it happen.
Well, I've been to Jordan. I mean, you know, I've been to Petra in Jordan, yes, which is fantastic.
Dying
and everybody should see that. Morocco's, I mean, even Jordan with Petra, I mean, it's well established, tourist infrastructure. So,
sure.
I mean, it's not like it's so hard to. And Morocco,
no.
you could take a ferry from Spain right over there. I mean, it's just like it's not.
Totally.
How we both skipped it by this point, I don't know how that's happened,
oh,
but it's.
Wait, want to hear something crazy? A country in Europe that I have not been to, your jaw is going to drop.
Oh, let me guess that it's obvious. Is it?
Yeah.
Pathetic. What is Germany? Have you not been?
No, I've been like 10 times to Germany and I've worked with the tourism board a bazillion. So I've done Germany a whole lot.
Spain? Portugal?
Yeah, I haven't been to Spain.
You kidding me?
I've been to Portugal like 10 times and I have not been to Spain.
You don't want to drive the extra half hour?
I went to Portugal. That was my first international solo flight. I was 7 years old, flew from Newark to Portugal.
Wow.
At 7 years old without an adult. Because my aunt and uncle had a place there. And so I was visiting with my cousins for the summer. So I've spent time in Portugal. And now my other aunt on my mom's side is in the orchestra in Porto. And she's worked there for the past 30 years.
That's
and
cool.
So, been there so many times. France so many times. I've spent like summers in.
That's amazing to me. I mean, not even like so
Spain.
Many. And flights, so many flights go through Madrid as well. And then and Barcelona.
Seriously.
And you haven't even just gotten off the plane. That's amazing.
I've never even flown through the airport.
That's so nuts to me. I mean, how about doing that this summer or sometime this year?
Yeah. I'll be like, I got to get to Spain. Let me go for
Spain
some
and Morocco. You can knock them both off right there.
Oh, that's true. That's a good one. Yeah.
You take the ferry from Malaga. It goes right to Morocco.
Oh, perfect. Okay, great. You have officially planned my weekend trip.
Yes.
Spain to Morocco.
If you could fly to Egypt for a day, I mean, you can do that. That's very easy.
I'm gonna send this to Alice right after and be like, I have our crazy trip and we're gonna do Spain and Morocco. Done.
And you'll the south of Spain is great. You'll love it. And then go to Sevilla.
Done.
It's really nice too. But okay, we gotta wrap this up because you're a busy person. I know you got so much to do. Let's not make this another 10 years, shall we?
No, please.
Hopefully,
let's not.
We'll see you soon. Maybe we'll run each other on another Cunard ship.
Maybe.
You got any cruise gigs coming up? Maybe I'll see you.
Don't know which ones yet, but maybe. Maybe a celebrity, maybe a something else. So
okay.
We'll see.
Celebrity's nice too.
Yeah.
They're all good.
They're all different. They'll have a different flavor, you know?
Well, I'm just saying about like working with these brands. It's like how do they give you kind of free reign of saying we want this, do your thing, or do they go, no, we specifically want you to show this.
Every brand is different. I'll say that. Every brand is different. I think the ones that get it, they give you they might be like free reign, but we'd love like a focus on XYZ.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like these are our new features. Obviously you want to focus on the new features. But the ones that get it generally have free reign. Others that might have more red tape behind the scenes, there might be a little bit more hand holding and they're like, oh, it needs to be specifically like this. This is the exact language that you can use, et cetera. So
do they want to see rough cuts? I mean, do they like give you notes and all that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So again, it depends on what I'm doing. I've got some that it's like cool post, whatever. Some that'll be like, oh, we'd love to see this before you share it. And it just might be like good to go. And then some it's like full on rough cuts. We don't like the graphics you chose.
Oh, has anybody ever asked you to pull stuff down? Like, hey,
oh, after it's been posted?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, when when that happens, it's been for weird legal things that don't really have anything to do with me. One, I did a thing for a company and it was like how something was worded. They felt like it didn't tie in like travel agents enough, and travel agents were like a big part of their base, and which is weird because I'm like, I'm very much for it, but I had to, whatever. So it was like weird, like legal things after the fact, or a big thing with Marriott, and this has happened to a lot of people. Marriott has had to really like tighten down anything that's content that's like in affiliation with them has to be royalty free. Because they got a lot of pushback. So if you were a creator and you like did a collab post, they might like have agreed to that before, but now they've gotten so much pushback on like legal stuff in the background that they're like, oh, we can't collab on this. You can keep it up, that, and then it's like anything moving forward, just please make sure it's royalty free, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, a lot of that kind of makes sense, but we're also in the social media, such a free reign world. At times you're just like, do we really have to be that bent out of shape about it? But I mean, legalities are legalities. So
how do they keep it up? I mean, it's like they change the algorithms all the time. It's like,
yeah,
you have to be on it a lot, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's just constantly changing.
I mean, it's constantly changing, but I think like at the end of the day, it's like you have to decide whether you're going to sit there and chase algorithms and likes, or are you going to create content that inspires you and like people respond well to. And some days the algorithm is going to be in your favor. Some days there's going to be a glitch. Maybe you have to repost something and you just kind of move on. But I think the big thing when it comes to social media is, and this is where it's been challenging, is that a lot of people were getting into social media and it became an outside source of validation for whatever that is. And so, and I equate it to like modern day celebrity. People yeah. that become celebrity, and we know this from being in Hollywood.
Like
people,
like becoming a stand-up because your parents never hugged you? That kind of thing like that?
Totally.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
What's that about? No, but I mean, it's like if you get any sort of fame, or whether it's social media or this or that, early on and you don't know necessarily – you become then addicted to like, that's my external
source of validation. Yeah, it's a dopamine hit, you know. Yeah.
Totally. And so it's like, you have to realize like the validation comes from within and not necessarily from the social media. And it's like, if you just continue doing good work that you're proud of, like the work is going to come to you. The visibility will come here and there. Like you just have to keep your standards up, obviously, for yourself. So, you know, it's, you can approach it in two different ways. So you either approach it to chase the likes and the algorithm, or you approach it to just be like, I'm creating a good brand. It's my personal brand. It's like my visual resume. And I stand by that, whether I happen to get a lot of views on it or not a lot of views. You know, it's a leverage game too.
Well, so. You're doing great. I'm so happy for your success and all that stuff. It's awesome.
I mean, you're doing great stuff too. I
can't wait to come on, to
cross, like our paths across on a cruise. That'll be a lot of fun.
That would be great. That would be great. Or, you know, somewhere on some trip, somewhere down, probably in an airport, I'll run into you.
Hey. Or down the street, you know, something.
Who's that well-rested person coming off that plane? Look at that person. Oh, that's Sarah.
Oh, that's Sarah. She's
It looks like she just got about 8 hours of sleep while I've been sitting there with the reading. I'm that asshole with the reading light on in the red eye. That's me.
Totally.
That's me. So what do you think Wrapping it all up, I mean, what do you think all this travel and all these experiences and meeting all these people from around the world, how has it changed you as a person, and what have you learned and about yourself and the world, and how has it changed you?
Well, I mean, I always say, like, I was really lucky because I got to travel at such a young age. So I think it changed my worldview from the get-go. But if anything, I'm just constantly reminded of the good in humans. I know that we're fed a lot of negative news, and sometimes we're like, oh my gosh, what is happening? And it's easy to fall into that trap of, oh, but we have a lot of challenges. But I think for me, the reminder is at the end of the day, we're all just humans, and we all want the same things. Like we all want to be able to eat. We all want to be able to provide for our family. We all want to have love. We all want to have a comfortable home and just feel safe. And so I think that understanding the human element, to me, travel, just like remembering, like, we're all just human and we're like all in it together. For me, that's just like the special part of travel. Especially in a time where like just there's a lot going on in the world. Domestically and internationally. And so I think it's nice to have those reminders to give us a little bit of hope in humanity.
That's great. That's great. Oh, and I forgot to let you have your get your plugs in. So where can people find you?
Oh my gosh.
Where can people get your book? Where can people want to follow you? Is that askaconcierge.tv still?
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. So you can head to my website, askaconcierge.tv, on social media everywhere at askaconcierge, or connect with me personally on LinkedIn, which is Sarah Dandashy. And yeah, pretty easy to find. So find me. Message me.
I found you. I found you again. It took me 10 years, but I found you. Okay, Sarah. Thank you. Sarah Dandashy, everybody. Thanks. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we try to answer one important question. What's really worth knowing in travel today? From engaging destinations to ways to travel better, save more, and see deeper, and conversations with some of the smartest people in travel, from Samantha Brown to Andrew McCarthy, new episodes weekly on voyescape.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm David Brody, co-host of the Travel in 10 podcast. Together, myself and my co-host Tim Johnson have traveled to over 150 countries around the world and all 7 continents. Now we're sharing our favorite places, some of our best tips and experiences from all around the world in just 10 minutes on Travel in 10. Join us at voyescape.com.